How many of you like a good game of charades? Everyone's sort of looking down. Zach, come on up here. Is there anyone else that would like to play with Zach? There's no food involved, nothing you have to eat, nothing tricky here. This is just a good game of charades. Steve, come on down. You're going to help us out here. He was up.
I really thought you tricked everyone.
All right, you can come on up here. So you all, I don't know all of the official rules here, but you're going to get 90 seconds. Who wants to be the actor?
He does.
Thank you for volunteering.
All right, so you're going to start with number one, but you're gonna get 90 seconds to act out. And when you do that, what you need to know is you're not competing against anyone else today. You're competing against the other two services. So the morning service, the 9:30 service, got 6 points. They were a slow start, but then they picked up quickly. So if you do more than that, then you will be the champion until we'll find out tonight who gets the most points. But let's go ahead now.
Don't put a lot of hope in this.
All right.
Hold on. My watch is a little slow, so.
Can I make noises? No
noises. Wow. Yeah, only action. So I'm going to move out of your way.
All right.
And ready, set, go.
Flying.
You're close.
Landing. Taking off.
You do all those things.
Hey, no words here.
Air travel?
He, you can skip if you want to. The word was airplane.
Close.
Throwing a football, playing sports.
Think one word, one word.
There you go.
There you go, 1 point.
COVID. No, I'm sorry. Colds, flu, fever, sneeze, elbows.
All right, two points.
Youth group. Sad. Happy. Emotions.
Happy.
3 points.
Wow. Skip.
He is skipping cat.
Taught well.
Cat.
Disco? Yeah.
Disco. Good. 4 points.
Fishing.
Wow.
5 points.
Haircut.
Yeah.
6 points. You're tied.
Cooking.
It was hot dog.
Hot dog.
Hot dog. 10 seconds.
No pressure.
I don't know that.
Skip.
Dinosaur.
That was dinosaur.
Macarena.
Macarena, 7 points, and you are done. All right, thank you very much. So you all pulled ahead 1 point over the morning service. Congratulations. Now, why are we playing this in church, you may be wondering. What we saw here, as Zach and Steve were trying to convey words to each other and act different words out and trying to understand what different people or what he was saying, is what we were seeing is basically what the author, Paul, is saying in our passage this morning. Is Paul's the title of this message is called Making the Gospel Visible. And then we're going to see from this passage that Paul is wanting to show us how we can make the gospel visible in our lives to those around us. And his word, though, he would just have one word if he were playing this game, and that would be gospel. Gospel. How do you make that visible in your life? And so let me go ahead and read the first part of this passage. And this first part is just a little bit confusing, and so I'll read it, and then I'll explain what's going on here. Chapter 2, verse 1. And then after 14 years, I went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas, taking Titus along with me. I went up because of the revelation and set before them, though privately, before those who seemed influential, the gospel that I proclaimed among the Gentiles, in order to make sure I was not running or had not run in vain. But even Titus, who was with me, was not forced to be circumcised, though he was a Greek. Yet because a false brother secretly brought in, who slipped in to spy out our freedom that we have in Christ Jesus, so that they might bring us into slavery, to them we did not yield in submission even for a moment, so that the truth of the gospel might be preserved for you. And from those who seem to be influential, What they were makes no difference to me. God shows no partiality. Those, I say, who seemed influential added nothing to me. We're going to go ahead and stop there for just a moment. We saw in chapter 1 in the past 2 weeks, Paul has been correcting the churches in Galatia about the issue that they were having for corrupting the gospel of Jesus Christ. The good news that Jesus can save people from their sins. But he was also defending his own authority to correct them. And so Paul here is making the case that he received the good news of Jesus Christ, the gospel message, from Jesus himself and did not make it up. Instead, that he was given the message by Jesus. And so he continues then in verses 1 through 6, which I just read, giving the story about why he has the authority and why he can speak about this subject. He talked in chapter 1 about a short visit to Jerusalem, but now in chapter 2 he's talking about going to Jerusalem for 14 years, and this time he takes Barnabas and Titus with him. Titus was not a Jew, he was a Greek, so he was a non-Jewish Christian. And Paul brings him essentially as maybe as what we might call like a show and tell, saying, hey, look at what God has done in the life of a person who is not a Jew. And he's bringing them to all the Christians who were Jewish up to that point. And Paul's saying that he did not make Titus get circumcised. But while in Jerusalem, some false brothers came in, we see in verse 4, and they were even influential false brothers. False teachers, and they tried to tell him that, Titus, in order for you to be saved, you must follow the Jewish customs. You must get circumcised. And Paul adamantly opposes this, not because he feels sorry for Titus's private parts, but because he said he does not want the gospel corrupted in the church. And so in verse 5, he says, so that the truth of the gospel might be preserved for you. His focus, you see, is to Paul, everything hinges on the purity of the gospel. He fights to make sure that nothing is added to the good news of Jesus, to the gospel message, and he fights to make sure that nothing is subtracted from it. And so for the next few verses, he's going to talk about how this pure gospel impacts people and how it not only impacts them, but how it causes people to live. So let me read verses 7 through 10. On the contrary, when they saw that I had been entrusted with the gospel to the uncircumcised, just as Peter had been entrusted with the gospel to the circumcised, for he who worked through Peter for his apostolic ministry to the circumcised worked through me for mine to the Gentiles. And when James and Cephas being Peter, and John, who seemed to be pillars or leaders, perceived the grace that was given me, they gave the right hand of fellowship to Barnabas and me, that we should go to the Gentiles, and they to the circumcised. Only they asked us to remember the poor, the very thing I was eager to do. And so in these verses, Paul's describing some of the ways that the gospel is lived out in their lives. And what it's doing is, as it's living out, it's essentially proving that the gospel is real in the life of Paul and Titus. And so it's showing the other leaders, the other apostles that had been established leaders, that's saying, hey, the gospel is truly alive in this dude named Paul, who's just sort of come out of nowhere to be a leader and now to correct the church in Galatia. And so in essence, Paul is showing us, we can pull out of here three ways that the gospel is made visible in the lives of Christians. Now, I'm not talking about how we're saved. This is not how someone puts their faith in Jesus Christ. But once someone is saved, once they have received the gospel into their life, these are three things that should start to shine out or come out of each person that has put their faith in Jesus. And if they are not coming out, I'm not going to say you're not saved, but I am going to say that there is something spiritually wrong or spiritually defective in your life if these things are not coming out. So something needs serious attention if the three things I'm going to bring up are not coming out because Paul is mentioning all three of these as something that shows, that is visible in the lives of those who believe in Jesus Christ. So let me go ahead and we'll work our way through these three things. First of all, the first one is sharing the gospel. Sharing the gospel. He says in verse 7, "On the contrary, when they saw that I had been entrusted with the gospel to the uncircumcised," and he goes on to talk about how Peter had been entrusted with the gospel to the Jewish people, to the circumcised. The reason that this is mentioned is Paul here is proving the legitimacy of the gospel. He's showing that it is something that is being shared. And so you see, the gospel is not just a word. It's not just an idea. It is a real living work of God. And so when it comes into the life of a person in a true and meaningful way, then it is something that a person cannot contain for themselves. They have to share it with someone else. On May 15th, 2006, my girlfriend and I were sitting on a rock at Great Falls, Maryland. And look at this. I look exactly the same. Not a lot has changed. And I got down on one knee, which was hard to do because my leg had fallen asleep. And I proposed to her, asking her to be my wife. She said yes. And we were both very happy. We soaked in the romance of the moment because we were now engaged to be married. And after that, we did something that probably most engaged people do. We kissed. No. Not that. We called and texted our family to tell them the news. It was news that we wanted, that was so important to us that we had to share it with other people. And so what I'm getting at here is that if it is important to you, then you will share it. If the good news of Jesus has a big enough impact in your life, then it will be something that you will want to share with other people, not because the pastor guilts you into sharing it, not because you want to impress your small group, because, oh, I shared the gospel three times this week, not because you're trying to earn favor from God, but God, look at me. I've just shared the gospel with people. Not because of any of these reasons, but simply because it is important news to you that you want to share with other people. And so you see, the gospel is a quote-unquote secret that cannot be kept. It can't be kept. So sharing it, Paul's saying, is proof that the gospel is alive in them and in you. And so that's the first thing. The gospel is visible in you. But the second thing is the unity of Christians. The unity of Christians. He says in verse 9, "And when James and Cephas," again that's Peter, "and John, who seemed to be pillars, perceived the grace that was given to me, they gave the right hand of fellowship to Barnabas and me." So again here we see that the gospel of Jesus Christ was evident in their life. Why? Because they gave them the right hand of fellowship. That symbolically means, it means acceptance or agreement or trust. Now these are people, remember, these are people with different backgrounds. These are people that are called to go on different missions. Paul feels called to the non-Jews. The others feel called to the Jewish people. So they have different missions. They have different interests and passions. As we're going to see later in later chapters, they have different beliefs, and some of them even have some sin issues going on, even right now, that they're going to be corrected in the next chapter or so. But in the midst of all these differences, they had an even bigger passion that made everything else secondary, and that was the gospel of Jesus Christ. I've been reading a book about the rise and fall of Nazi Germany during World War II. And one of the things that stood out to me is just how these countries that are very different, we have Germany and Italy and Russia for the first part, all very different, but they all joined together for one purpose. And so they spoke different languages, They had different ideas. They had different cultures. They were in different areas. And yet they all worked together because they had the idea of carrying out their one common purpose, of dominating that area. Now, why would they do that? Because they had shared interests. They're willing to look past the language differences or the food difference, all these differences, because they wanted to work together to accomplish something. And so if I were to go to each one of you, and I have gone to some of you, and I've learned that we definitely do not agree on everything. We disagree on things. We have different football teams that we like. We have certain differences in various theological beliefs. We do things differently in our life and in our family. We have different opinions about music. We have different political beliefs, all of us. But in the midst of that, the reason that we can still gather together here this morning and worship God together is because of the impact that Jesus Christ has had on our lives. And so it is this commonality around the good news of Jesus, around the gospel, that makes everything else less important. And so we gather and we work together because Jesus has saved us and we want to help others be saved by him as well. And so it's around this fact, listen, it's around this fact that Republicans and Democrats can work together here in this church. It's around this fact that millennialists and post-millennialists and pre-millennialists can all work together for the good news of Jesus Christ. It's around this fact that the rich and the poor, the black and the white, all folks can work together for the good news of Jesus Christ. These differences do not matter. Even, listen, even Ravens fans and Patriot fans can work together for the good news of Jesus Christ. All of these pale in light of what Jesus has done for us. And that is what is most important. And because of that, we can have unity. It's not that we all have unity because we agree on everything. We have unity because we agree on the most important thing. If I may harass someone, I don't think he's in this service here. But this is just one example of many people that I could give. I look for a good flattering picture of him. This is Adam, and he's one of the deacons of the church. While we were in a meeting a while back, we were having a discussion about an issue going on in the church. And we had an area of disagreement. Adam did not agree with some of the other folks. And during the meeting, we all came to a compromise, what we decided. It was not what Adam wanted to do, but in the end, he said this. He said, even though I don't agree with you, I'm willing to go along with it. And as you can see in the picture, he went along with it. My point is that for the sake of spreading the gospel, he was willing to put aside his differences. He was willing to put aside his preference in this issue to work together. And that right there is a picture of gospel unity among us. And so if we're just always going around fighting and arguing about things, that does not show that Jesus Christ has changed us. And so we should be able to, as adults, have differences and yet still come and worship together and be friends together and love each other. Because, yeah, you may believe something different about politics than I do. You may believe something about theology than I do. But as long as we believe in Jesus Christ as the salvation for our world, then we can come together. Amen? Now, having said that, I'm not going to go into detail here, but Paul does give two areas in which we should not have unity. In chapter 1, he talks about how if the gospel message is corrupted, then that is a no-no. That is a area that he will not compromise. And so if the gospel message is corrupted, we cannot have unity in a church setting with folks like that. But second, in Corinthians, it talks about when someone is in sin, not just sin, but in blatant outward sin and flaunting it. He actually says not have unity with them, but kick them out of the church. Now, why is that? That sounds mean. It sounds judgmental. Because just continuing to allow someone to blatantly sin in front of everyone else in that way would hurt the church. And so, again, that is one area that we would not have unity where there's blatant sin going on. But in all the other little differences going on, different beliefs and different ideas, we can work together. We can have differences about end times, but we all believe Jesus is coming back. We can have differences about what's going to happen in November, but Jesus is coming back, so ultimately, that is not the biggest issue. We can have all these differences, but come around the main idea, and that is the unity of the gospel. The unity of the gospel. All right, I got a little excited here and completely lost my spot. Here we are. Third thing here that I want to talk about, and this is from verse 10. Paul talks about remembering the poor. Remembering the poor. He says in verse 10, only they ask us to remember the poor, the very thing I was eager to do. This is very similar to what James says in 1:27, James 1:27. Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit the orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world. I was thinking about this week. Why would this one issue be brought up above all the other issues? They're basically saying, as a group of leaders, we agree on the gospel. We agree that we're going to go different areas, different missions, different passions. So we're going to focus around the gospel plus this. This is going to be our main focus. This is what's going to validate our gospel ministry. And it's remembering the poor. So why not that? And instead of why not being good to people, doing good works? Why not reading the Bible or telling other people about Jesus as that one issue that is the most important? Here's why. Because Jesus cares for the weak. He cares for the outcast. He cares for the poor. And he cares for the hurt. And he actually modeled this when he came to the earth. He showed us that he loves those who are poor. And he showed us in three ways. I want to touch on these just quickly now. But when he came to this earth, he showed us by becoming poor himself. Have you ever thought about how Jesus, who orchestrated his coming to the earth, could have come into a rich family? He could have been born into a rich family, or he could have popped in as a rich person. He could have not been born into a no-name family that's born in a stable, or even been born, he's born as a helpless little baby. And yet he became, and he was born poor himself. Born in a stable. A stable! I'm not rich, I'm a pastor, but not even my kids were born in a stable. And yet he grew up just in this poor, no-name family. I remember when I flew to China a few years ago, I stayed in several hotels, and all of these hotels were geared towards Westerners like me. And so every day I ate buffet meals. I had very good food, better than what I have at my house every day. And I stayed at good Marriott hotels, all this stuff. I slept in comfortable, air-conditioned rooms. Now, why? Why would I stay in places like that? Because I'm a Westerner. And so when I went to adopt, I wasn't going to come and incorporate the idea of my adopted child and live like her. No, I was coming and bring her to live like me. But think about this. Jesus, the King of the world, the one through whom the entire world is created, came and was born into a poopy-smelling cave to some underwhelming family. Why would a king do that? Why would a king do that? Why would he do that? Because he's intentionally showing that his message is a message for all people. Not just the fortunate, but the poor and the unfortunate as well. But he also showed this, caring for the poor, by proclaiming good news to the poor. When I went to China again, I went to the orphanage, and they handed me my daughter, Grace, and I picked her up, and I plopped a lollipop in her mouth to keep her from crying, and I carried her around as they gave me a tour of the orphanage. Now, I saw everything that they were showing me, but my attention was on my daughter because she was now mine. She was mine. And so these other kids, I was nice to them, but my daughter was the one that my focus was on. Now listen to Jesus' words in Luke chapter 4, where he quotes from Isaiah. He goes into church and it says he unrolled the scroll and found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, and to set at liberty those who are oppressed, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Jesus basically is coming and saying, "Hey, poor people, I came for you. I care about you. You are mine." And this leads us to the last thing that Jesus is showing us here, that Jesus is promising a great reversal of fortunes for them one day. That one day, that when the poor get to heaven, guess what? They ain't going to be poor anymore. And that's good news for some of us right now. Amen? When we get to heaven, we're not going to be driving a beat-up car out there. We're going to be driving something nice. When we get to heaven, we're not going to be worrying about how our bills are going to be paid, because God has taken care of everything. And we are going to be living in the glory and the riches of the one who loves us. Those health problems that we have are going to be gone. That those unfortunate in circumstances that we've had to live with here on this earth are going to be gone. The captivity that we've lived with here on this earth are going to be gone. All of those are going to be gone. There's going to be a reversal of fortune for those who are in Jesus Christ. So Jesus is saying, "Hey, poor people, I love you. I care for you. And one day I'm going to help you, and you will be poor no longer." And so with that in mind, then I'm saying it's important to Jesus, and so it needs to be important to us as well. Caring for the poor, not only is it important, but it is one of the ways that we show that the gospel of Jesus Christ is living in us. Now, this is a big issue, and so this is not something where I can say, do this and do that and do that and everything's fixed. But I want to challenge you that as you go out of here in a few minutes, to be intentional about living in a way that cares for the poor. That lives in a way that says, "Poor people, you matter to me because you matter to Jesus." Let me read what Todd Wilson said. He gives a good thought. He gives some good thoughts on this. He says, "Nothing provides us with a more concrete expression of the grace of God than when believers give their resources sacrificially to meet the needs of others. You know it's the grace of God when you see someone sacrificially take their own resources and translate them into practical help for other people, whether this involves their time or their treasure or their talents." And so we can tell that God has a hold of our heart when we're willing to take money out of our pocket and invest it in people. When we're willing to give to others to help the less fortunate, that's when we know that God has a hold of up here. So let me challenge us now. Let's make the gospel visible in our life. Let's make it visible by sharing the gospel. Let's make it visible by living in unity. And let's make the gospel visible by caring for the poor. Those are the three issues that Paul brings up. And that's how the gospel will shine out of our lives. I want to close with this story I came across this week. It's about a missionary who brought the Jesus film to a jungle tribe in East Asia. These people had never heard about Jesus Christ before. And so the missionary came to this jungle town, this little area, this village, and he turned on the projector and the people watched about Jesus for the very first time. And they watched as Jesus showed his love for the people and as he healed people and as he gave attention to children and as he healed and hung out with the poor. They watched as Jesus then was arrested, beaten, and put on trial. And at this moment, as they watched, these people became unglued. And they stood up and they began to shout at the cruel men at the screen, demanding that this outrage against Jesus stop. And when nothing changed, they turned on the missionary who was at the projector and began attacking him because he must have been the one responsible for the injustice. And the missionary actually had to stop the film and say, hey, this story isn't over yet. So everyone sat back down and they began watching the story some more. And they watched as Jesus was crucified. They watched as he hung on the cross. And again, the people watching got upset and they began to weep and wail. And they were so loud that the missionary again had to stop and had to again explain, the story isn't over yet. And so again, they sat down and began watching. And then they watched as Jesus died, but then was risen again. And when he rose again, pandemonium broke out into the group, but this time not because they were upset, but because they were elated. They began celebrating and shouting and cheering and dancing because Jesus Christ had risen from the grave. Now, I like that story because that is just a great illustration of the good news of Jesus Christ being made visible into the lives of other people. And that is exactly what we are called to do, church. Maybe not in those specific ways, but we are called to make Jesus and to make the good news of Jesus shine to those around us. And maybe you aren't called to go to East Asia, but you are called to go to your workplace. You are called to go to your neighbors. You are called to go to those around you and let the gospel shine out of you. That's what we're called to do. And so I want to close with two questions. First of all, do you know the saving power of the gospel? And if you've never put your faith in Jesus Christ, then you can do it even right now by calling out to him and asking him to be the Lord of your life. So do you know the saving power of the gospel? But the second question probably applies to many of you. Is the gospel visible in you? So you've already put your faith in him. You've already followed him as Lord and Savior. But maybe you've drifted a little bit away. Maybe this little light of yours is not shining as bright as it should. And so is the gospel visible as you? I'm going to ask the worship team to come on up. And we're going to close with one last song. And as we do, I want to encourage you that if there's an area in your life where you feel like you're lacking, then I want to encourage you to get right with God. If there's an area of sin in your life, then this is the time right now to get right with God. Because it's not that you're trying to earn anything from him, but that you have a true and living gospel inside of you. And so let that light shine out of you to others. Let me go ahead and pray for us.